Following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on September 8, 1990 in Sweden. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 25, Verse 41.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mukakruti vachalang pangulang gayate girinyat ki pathamahang bande Sri Gurum dinatarinang paramanandamadhavam Sri Chaitanyishwaram. Purport. Every husband is certainly a great hero to his wife. In other words, if a woman loves a man, that man appears very beautiful and magnanimous. Unless one becomes beautiful in the eyes of another, one cannot dedicate his whole life to another. The husband is considered very magnanimous because he gives as many children to the wife as she likes. Every woman is fond of children. Therefore, any husband who can please his wife by sex and give her children is considered very magnanimous. Not only does the husband become magnanimous by begetting children, but by giving his wife ornaments, nice food, and dresses. He keeps her completely under submission. Such a satisfied wife will never give up the company of her husband. Manu Sanghita recommends that to keep a wife satisfied, a husband should give her some ornaments, because women are generally fond of home, ornaments, dresses, children, etc. In this way, the woman is the center of all material enjoyment. In this regard, the word vikyatam is very significant. A man is always famous for his aggression toward a beautiful woman, and such aggression is sometimes considered rape. Although rape is not legally allowed, it is a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport. Text 41, Chapter 25, Canto 4 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the chapter entitled The Characteristics of King Puranjana. So the story of King Puranjana, told by Narada Muni to King Prachina Bharhi, is a unique way of preaching, not frequently found in the Vedas, only found in one or two places. That since Narada Muni had to preach to King Prachina Bharhi, who was not very well tuned or open to spiritual instruction, not very well trained, in other words, in philosophical thought, so he started telling this very interesting story, which was filled with all kinds of material details. So it was very easy for the king to keep his attention. And once we start to speak, we are not the body, we start to speak all the philosophical points, people's minds start to wander a little bit. It's difficult to keep the mind focused. But when you're discussing about some story, here a great hero meets a beautiful woman in the forest, and their discussion, they get married. So it's very light discussion, it seemed very easy to focus. Of course, after the whole discussion is over, then King Prachina Bharti wants to know, what does it all mean? And then Narada Muni explains what all the allegories actually mean, and that's given in later chapters. So while the story is unfolding, it actually did take one verse at a time. Each one is a part of a very long picture. That the woman here that the king is meeting and going to marry becomes his queen is actually the intelligence. How the conditioned soul is united with the intelligence. But to make the story possible, so Narada Muni is just presenting it as the king meeting a young beautiful woman in the forest. So Prabhupada is explaining from the Vedic literature that human relations in the material world are quite well documented. They're quite well... many instructions are given in the Manu Sanghita and other literatures. What the duty of a material husband and material wife are. So one of the duties of the husband, it states, is to provide the wife with all the necessities of life, home, ornaments, dresses, children, and that this will keep the wife happy in material consciousness. Of course, nobody in the material world is ever happy, whether man or woman, unless they're somewhat spiritually trained, because material desire doesn't know any end. Yanantascha, unlimitedly branched in all different directions. So these formulas for satisfying one another, of course, are based on persons who have some mode of goodness, who are somewhat simple, who are also somewhat spiritually trained, in a sense. If a person is having very base nature, then no matter what you do, it's not going to be fully satisfying. These are like in a normal scenario. This is also not considering that, just like Prabhupada said here, that normally this is what, or generally this is what the, generally, in this way the woman is the center of all material enjoyment. That Srila Prabhupada, one time he was walking with us in Mayapur, and we saw that there was a pair of bulls going around and around, maybe two or four bulls, I forget now how many, tied to a stick, and they were under their feet, they were turning around different bushes of dal, mung or urd, and by the thrashing of their feet, the pods were broken from the dry plants and the seeds were being separated. This was a means of thrashing, I guess you'd call it, the grain from the plant. So Srila Prabhupada, he stood there for a while and watched the bulls going around and around while the farmers were pushing them on. And he said, "You see that stick?" He asked the farmer, "What is that stick called?" He said, "That's called the Me Danda. Me means woman and Danda means stick. It's the woman's stick." He said, "Yes, this is material Grihamedi life, is that everything is centered around the woman." So like that, just like these bulls are going around and around in material life, person may be going here and there everywhere, but everything is based on the wife, on the woman, on the sense gratification. So this is the difference between Grihamedi life and Grihastha life. Where Grihastha life, the husband and wife, put Krishna in the center. They're both walking around Krishna. So this is the difference between the Manu Samhita is just meant for general human society, whereas Nectar of Devotion and Srimad Bhagavatam, other instructions are meant for those who are spiritually awakened or to awaken persons spiritually. So here he's teaching to the King Prachinabahi this story. Later on he'll explain what the story means. Just as an ordinary human life, a man becomes very attached to his wife and simply follows whatever the wife does. Similarly, this King Paranjana is actually the soul, and the wife is the intelligence. That in material life, we're wedded to the intelligence. And if the intelligence is materialistically contaminated, then the soul follows that materialistic way. And if the intelligence is spiritualized, then the soul will act in a spiritual way. So we have the opportunity to spiritualize our intelligence. The material nature is automatically organized in such a way that it will materialize, materialistic, make our mind or intelligence materialistic. We've been here for countless births, but by the process of Krishna consciousness, we can spiritualize the intelligence. This is essential if we want to achieve that perfection in our life. The Vedas, they have Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and they also have Upasana Kanda. They tell people how to lead their material life according to the laws of karma. They tell people how to get liberation, Jnana Kanda. And they also tell one how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is actually the postgraduate study. Once one is situated in devotional service, then one is transcendental to the three modes of nature. Mangcha jo bhavicharina bhakti jo gena sevate sagunan samatitaitan brahma bhuaya kalpate. Sagunan samatitaitan. Transcendental to the three modes of the material nature. So Srila Prabhupada, he is very knowledgeable about this material world. And he was disgusted by the way that the Western society had developed so much in technology, so much in different aspects, but spiritually was so degraded that degraded in the sense that they were just taking sense gratification to be the goal of life. It's not that a spiritualist doesn't know what is the basis of material life. You just from reading these purports, you can get a really good education about what material life is, even if someone doesn't have any personal experience. Srila Prabhupada is very generously given description about what is going on in the material world. What is the type of thought train that people are having in the material world? But it's also necessary for us to transcend this ordinary type of general consciousness and come up to the higher level of consciousness, which also is given later on in the purports. Women should also know their weakness. These are the nature. Men have a certain nature, women have a certain nature, and we always will tend to fall back to our lower nature unless we keep ourselves spiritualized. We have a need for dedicated devotees in the Krishna conscious movement. And in the age of Kali, it's very difficult to be a sannyasi. Practically speaking, one of the five things forbidden in Kali Yuga is sannyas, especially the karma sannyas, where one gives up all activities. But in general, we found that sannyas is very difficult. So many young men will get married in the Krishna conscious movement and will be pursuing their devotional service. Now, once someone gets married to a Krishna conscious wife, the wife also has a duty to remain Krishna conscious. And of course the husband will be providing so many things, but not to just come down to the level that is the only relationship, that I have to have the ornaments, I have to have this, I have to have that. But actually that the wife continues to be an inspiration, a good intelligence to the husband to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. We found like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he would spend about 1 hour a day, generally say 2 hours a day when he wasn't out preaching in Namhatta programs, going over his daily program. In the evening he'd spend about 2 hours a day with his family. The rest of the time he was at the office working in the morning, in the afternoon he was out preaching, in the evening he'd meet his family, then he'd take rest, he'd get up at midnight and be translating or writing different books and songs, and then in the morning he'd be chanting his japa, meeting a few people, take breakfast and be off to work, you see. So Srila Prabhupada wanted that the devotees would continue on with their service. But then if in the house, if they demand a lot of time, then maybe it becomes an obstruction in the person's service. You find this kind of a pulling sometime between different grihastha devotees. The wives come and complain even to the guru, my husband's not giving me enough time, I'm only seeing him 1 hour a day, this, that, and everything. Because he's a temple president or he's a manager of some sort, he's really busy. So, of course, in the Vedic society, the family also is a very social event. You have other family members and everyone together. Where in the West, families are very much separate. Like we were staying in North Calcutta in one family, and there was a very troublesome time. We didn't have any place to stay. It was called the Left Front Government of, the United Front. There was an Naxalite kind of communists who are very violent. They were followers of Mao Zedong. They said that they had to get victory by the barrel of a gun, smoking barrel. So there was a lot of terrorism. When we'd go to our temple, we'd have to raise our hands by the police, and they would be in sandbags in the center with guns trained on us to make sure that we weren't going to throw a bomb at them. If you moved quickly, you're finished. We would daily watch bomb fights beneath our window. There was one party on one side of the street, we were just on the corner, and then the other side of the street there was another party. So sometimes they would come over with shopping bags filled with homemade bombs. They'd throw them like here in Sweden, you throw snowballs. They would throw the bomb, and then the person would roll off, and they said, "Poof!" This is like daily where we sit there watching, you know, for breakfast. We'd see them fighting. The only thing was, it wasn't snowballs, and sometimes they would get injured. And sometime, one day, the police came, and right in front of us, they had captured a guy. Then they just let him go and said, and the guy looked back, and he tried to run off, and they just shot him. Cold blood. It was just an excuse to shoot him. They still tried to run away. This was a very heavy time, and so we didn't have a place to stay. One life member was there. He said, "No, you can stay in our house." And he had two apartments. He had his two sons, and one of the sons was married, had about five or six kids. So they had about eight or ten family members. So they all moved into a three-room apartment and gave half of their floor to us so we could stay with our five brahmacharis. And they all, 10 or 12 members, they're all staying in these three rooms. And they're quite happy. The grandfather would sleep on the front living room in a big gutty, and all the grandchildren would be there sleeping with him, and husband and wife would have their room. Somehow they adjusted everything, just they wanted to have the sadhu. They figured it was so hellish out there that if they had the sadhus, maybe they'd be protected. I think Krishna protected them, because somehow they survived. We survived somehow, I don't know. But you can see, like in India, there's a very, people can live together, they're just very close, and it's like a joint family kind of situation. But here you always find people complain that, or alone, wife has a child, she stays home the whole day, doesn't do service sometimes. I know Mayapur, I don't know how to adjust. Leaders in the West had to figure that out. We figured it out in America somehow. But in India, I know that Prabhupada, he didn't want to deal with that. There was, although now in Mayapur, I guess we have international crowd, we have to start dealing with it again. He was very concerned. He wanted all the Matajis to work, even though they had children. He wanted to do some service to stay engaged. Otherwise, their mind would get the better of them. So in the beginning, we had all the Indian Matajis, so they would have their, they'd be making cloth and the hand loom, or they'd be cutting sabjis, or they'd be doing something. You can cut sabjis even for the deities, even though your kids are crawling over you, if you're not in the deity, you're not in the kitchen. Yeah, what they do is they do it outside, then they wash all the sabjis before they cook them, so inside the kitchen. So they're different things. So everyone was busily engaged. That time, the only American mother came to Mayapur with her two kids, and then Prabhupada said, "What's she doing?" And so she said, "I can't do anything, I have two children." Then Prabhupada called us and said, "He's going to spoil all the Indian Matajis. You better send her back to Los Angeles." Because if she doesn't do anything, well, pretty soon nobody's going to do anything. And then she personally called her and said, "Look, in India everybody has to do some service." "But I can't, I have the children." "Okay, so then you better go back to America. There you can do that, but here it doesn't work." So Prabhupada actually, of course, he wanted everybody to be engaged in devotional service all of the time, but it seems difficult for different people. So all the members of the family, whether later on Prabhupada explains how even a husband to be satisfied in family life, he really needs to be trained as a brahmachari. Because otherwise he won't be satisfied with any amount of sex life. So both the husband needs to be a strong devotee, wife needs to be a strong devotee. Everyone has to be struggling with the senses. Senses are going to be pulling us in different ways. They all have to be engaged in devotional service. You see the great pure devotee couples in Chaitanya Lila, and you can see how they're engaged constantly in Lord Chaitanya's service. Actually, in the end of Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's a very short Lila, but it's very interesting. It's when all the devotees are coming from Mayapur, Navadvip Dham, to Jagannath Puri. And that time, the husbands and wives, they're all coming to see Lord Chaitanya. Or Brahma was coming with Sita Thakurani. Different devotees were, so many Maharajis were also there in the group. Many people would come, a whole, it's a famous group would be coming from Bengal to Jagannath Puri. So that time, they're just reaching Jagannath Puri, they're coming. I'm sure many of you have gone to Jagannath Puri, so as you go into Jagannath Puri, there's, even today the road goes near this Narendra Sarovar Lake, one of the routes to go inside. So apparently that was a very ancient route. So they were going also that way. Because just as they were entering into the outskirts of Jagannath Puri, they could hear kirtan. Ching, 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 ching. They could Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The kirtan was going. And they're all looking, where's the kirtan? Then all of a sudden, right in front, there they could see Lord Chaitanya and all of his associates, and they're coming behind was Jagannath on a palanquin. They're taking him to the Narendra Sarovar to do this special worship. So immediately they, in the lake, like a type of yatra, I don't know if it's Chandam yatra, which yatra, but they take him in the middle of the lake and they do a special worship to him. So immediately all the Navadip devotees, Nitai, no, Gaur, Nitai, Gaur, Haribo, whatever, they started shouting, Haribo, and immediately they paid their obeisances. And immediately the Lord Chaitanya, he stopped, he saw, oh, there are all the devotees in Navadip. So then they started to run to those devotees, paid obeisances, and Lord Chaitanya, he grabbed the different devotees and started to embrace them affectionately. And while the different devotees were embracing Lord Chaitanya, then behind at a distance were their wives. They were watching, and in their heart they were just touching the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. They were also just overwhelmed with love of Krishna, and tears were coming down their eyes. Naturally, all the devotees were greeting all the other devotees from in Jagannath Puri. They were all crying in ecstasy. Behind, the wives were crying in ecstasy. Everyone was crying. The tears were just flowing everywhere. You could say everyone was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness, absorbed in love of Krishna. They all wanted to. They were all extremely Krishna completely Krishna conscious in all their activities. So then they all went together, and then Lord Chaitanya and the other devotees, they proceeded with that special worship of Jagannath. I think Chaitanya Charitamrita explains how that some worship was done in the Narendra Sarovar, and then they had, with Advaita, there was water sports and everything going on. So this all just happened like spontaneously when they were arriving one time. So everyone was Krishna conscious, obviously. And how that, although the women kept their respectful distance, they observed the separation of men and women. I mean, when they're especially meeting Lord Chaitanya and the other brahmacharis and sannyasis and grihastas that were there in Jagannath Puri, but that they're also completely fixed in their love of Lord Chaitanya. So this kind of ideal situation where everyone is encouraging the other to do the proper thing in devotional service and spontaneously attracted to serving. So Lord Chaitanya also, he gave a special mercy to all the grihastas because he would accept invitations every day and go and eat at the different grihastas' house. So in the grihastas' house, then naturally the Mataji would be cooking the prasadam, then they'd be offering it to their deities, and then Lord Chaitanya would come and accept prasad. So it's very, so today there was an invitation by this, by Kashi Misra, or by Advaita Gosai, or by Srivas Thakur. So the invitation meant the whole family would be inviting, and they all would be cooking for, especially the wives would be cooking and for our Lord Chaitanya, and then be serving out to Lord Chaitanya the prasadam. So especially very well documented is how Sita Thakurani would be preparing very elaborate prasad for Krishna and giving the prasadam to Lord Chaitanya. Several places in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, those descriptions are given. And Lord Chaitanya would see the nice arrangement they made for Krishna, and he said that this is very devotional. See how nice the offering they made to Krishna. Because all the offerings are made for the pleasure of Krishna. So that was very pleasing to Lord Chaitanya. He'd only take the Mahaprasadam offered to the deity. So that way also Lord Chaitanya was giving mercy to, although he was a strict sannyasi and no women could go close or be alone with him, but to the families, he was giving them a lot of mercy, giving them association in that way, accepting their invitations, going to their house. If they would come and ask him, husband and wife would come and ask him questions, and he would also instruct them. One time, some Maharaji wanted to speak to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur alone. At that time, he said, here, this is all confidential people, no problem. He said, no, I just want to speak a few words alone. And again, Bhaktisiddhanta said, no, these are, you can trust these are my trusted people, it's all right. He wouldn't accept that, to just speak with anybody, any Maharaji alone. So, these are the examples which are given by the preachers in the renounced order, that on one hand they give mercy and a formal association, but naturally for maintaining the proper standard they had to be very conservative about anything beyond that. As far as grihasthas in Krishna consciousness, we can see that how the preachers of Lord Chaitanya's movement in Bengal, most of them were grihasthas. Even Lord Chaitanya sent back Nityananda to Bengal and told him to get married. He was a lifelong brahmachari. So he was already somewhat advanced in age, so there was no need for him to get married or anything. But actually, of course, from a material standpoint, Lord Chaitanya knew Nityananda was Balaram, and Nityananda knew that Lord Chaitanya was Krishna. Nityananda was very upset that Lord Chaitanya had taken the renounced order of life, because he couldn't tolerate to see the Lord undergoing some kind of austerities. What is the need? There's nothing that Lord Chaitanya has to gain. Austerities. People take sannyas in order to purify themselves, to engage mon kai bakko, mind, words, and deeds in devotional service. So there's no need for them to, for Lord Chaitanya to do, he has nothing to achieve. So this upset Nityananda. He broke his danda, threw it in the river. Didn't appreciate Lord Chaitanya is taking sannyas, taking all these austerities. Naturally, the devotees want to see the Lord very well taken care of. So later, Lord Chaitanya requested Nityananda that if we're both here, then who's going to preach in Bengal? So he asked him, anyway, you should get married. So Lord Chaitanya, some commentators explain that he was also showing how grihasthas should be engaged in their preaching activities, showing how grihastha brahmana Vaishnavas should be practicing Krishna consciousness. So Lord Nityananda went back and he was doing his preaching from Navadvip, from different places. One day he was staying in the house of Shivas Thakur, and he just called over Shivas and he whispered in his ear that Lord Chaitanya told me I should get married so you can make some arrangement. So then Shivas said, okay. Then he started to, he called one Krishna Hoda. He sent a word around different people to see whether somebody suitable. But who is suitable for Nityananda? An ordinary woman would not be suitable because didn't have the qualities that would match up. So practically there was nobody that they could find that was really suitable. But one day Krishna Hoda, he came. Krishna Hoda was a king. In Bengal history, there's a famous king called Hari Hoda, the father of Krishna Hoda. He's not famous for devotional life, but he was a king who went bankrupt. And it says he went so bankrupt that although the kingdom was running, but personally he had nothing. He was practically eating leaves, he didn't know what to do. It's just like really, he's a king without Lakshmi. But then somehow he got out of that situation and he became very solvent again. But so he was a famous historical figure. But his son, Krishna Hoda, he was a famous devotee. Hari Hoda also had some devotional quality, but he wasn't in the history books. I just found that he was famous for that, going bankrupt. And how he had a lot of austerity, then he did some worship of Krishna, something he got everything back. But Krishna Hoda, he was a famous Vaishnava. In fact, later, Nityananda made him a guru, and he just became a preacher, and he was known as a Mahant, Krishna Hoda, Mahant. Lord Nityananda made many people from different castes, Kshatriyas, Vaishya, whatever. If they were pure Vaishnavas, he made them gurus to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya. So this time, Krishna Hoda, he was one of the associates. He's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Hoda. 60th or something branch. He went and told Srivas that Surya Kanta Sarakila has two daughters. They seem to be suitable for Nityananda. give me the green signal and I'll make an approach. So then Srivas gave told him to follow it up. And so he went and talked to Suryakanta Sarakila, who's the elder brother, I think, of Gauri Das Pandit, who was Subal Sakha in Krishna's pastimes. So when Krishna Hora suggested to Suryakant that you should give your daughters in marriage to Nityananda, he wasn't a devotee of Nityananda at that time. He said, Nityananda! He's running around here and there and it's like doing his Harinam all over the place and running around and practically, he's like avadut. Sometimes he's jumping and running and sometimes he's just, how can I marry my daughters to him? And he's like felt offended. No, my daughters are wonderful. And Nityananda is a usual character, does strange things. Nityananda in his ecstasies would sometimes do inexplicable things for the common people, but. So Krishna Hora got very angry. You don't know what you're speaking about. You better reconsider what you're thinking. You're speaking very offensive. You don't know who Nityananda Prabhu is. This is the greatest opportunity in your life. Like that, Krishna Hora got very offended by his statements, walked off. That night, Suryakant Sarakela had a dream. In the dream, he saw Balaram and he saw Revati and Varuni, the two consorts of Balaram, saw that Revati and Varuni were being given in marriage to Balaram, and then they transformed, and he could see that Revati and Varuni were his two daughters, and Balaram was Nitai. He woke up shocked, and his hairs were standing on end, and then he could realize that I made a big mistake. And he called, sent a message for Krishna Hora, please forgive me. Committed offense against Nityananda. So I'm agreed to give my daughters. I had this dream. I can realize that actually this is meant to be. So Janavi and Basudha, the two daughters of Suryakant. So then Krishna Hora went over to see, that time Nityananda was, surrounded by his associates. They were discussing Krishna pastimes. And Nityananda had tears of love in his eyes. Someone was discussing how Krishna and Balaram were playing in the forest of Vrindavan with Sridham and Sudham and different. And then Nityananda was just ecstatically listening. And then everyone was, really wonderful, like all surrounding Nityananda and discussing Krishna Katha. So then Krishna Hora wants to give the message that, it was a successful negotiation, but everyone's absorbed in Krishna Katha. So somehow he gets Srivas Thakur to come over. And then he just informs him. So then Srivas Thakur goes and just whispers in Nityananda's ear to get his permission. He just, for a second, just gives a little smile. Okay, but then going back to Krishna Katha. So that was it. That was the green signal. So then Krishna Hara was told, go make the arrangements. So then Nityananda went to the place of Krishna Hara, which was in Borogachi. And Suryakant Sarakela's house was in Shaligram village. So all the brahmanas came, and the day before the wedding, then they have a customary abhishek. Actually, this is still observed today, that they do abhishek, especially now they sprinkle a little bit water, full abhishek, but then they did a full abhishek. But they find in the Sanskar Dipika by Gopal Bhatta Goswami that the day before the wedding, the wife takes the name of the bride, groom, the husband, and writes on a piece of paper, and then some mantras are chanted in a pot, and the paper is put in the pot of water with some turmeric or something in the water, I forget. And then the mantras are chanted, and then little water is sprinkled on the head, a little over the body. Three times it's sprinkled in different parts of the body. That empowers, that has different effects, blessing the bride and empowering her to whatever, keep the husband happy, something. Keep him in under her control or whatever. Keep them united. So, but before they did this, they had a whole abhishek for Nityananda, all the Brahmins, and they all came and they did a whole abhishek, you know, physically all over, you know. And the people got all excited doing that. They started throwing yogurt at each other and everything. It was the whole thing. Did a nice abhishek with turmeric water and yogurt and everything. Did a big abhishek. Then they went all over, went and they gave abhishek to the two girls, Vasudha and Janavadi. They had a big abhishek for them. And then the day of the wedding, and Nityananda Prabhu came, and they had the it's elaborately described in the Bhakti Ratnakar, a very big wedding ceremony of all Vaishnava style, giving the daughters on behalf of Krishna. And then after that, there was the, you know, all filled with kirtans and everything. And then they, Nityananda took the two girls, went back to Borogachi and stayed at Krishna Hora's palace. There's a deity of Nitai Gaur there, 450 years old at Borogachi today. And there's ruins of the palace are still there. One day we hope to fix that place up, make it a pilgrimage place. Nityananda Prabhu was personally there. These original deities are there. There's many far out places, things in Borogachi. I forget. There's some histories there. Some two lakes are there. Nityananda did some pastime with those lakes. So then after that, Nityananda, he went back to Navadvip, then he went to, he went on a tour, on a little tour with his family. Went to Advaita's house in Shantipur, and then he ended up in Khordha, which is about 10 kilometers or 7 kilometers north of Panihati. And there on the, near the bank of the Ganges, he set up his house. And then from there, that was pretty central because, a lot of Vaishnavas had left Navadvip when Lord Chaitanya left and had moved near closer to Panihati. So from there he was doing his preaching a lot, but he was traveling all over. But he was mainly traveling and then he'd go back to the house off and on. So he showed how to be a Vaishnava preacher as a Grihastha. So the Brahmanas, they would travel and preach a lot of time during the year, in the rainy season, like Srinivas, later on, after 50 years, 30, 40, 50 years. He was, of course, trained by Gopal Bhatta and Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan. He had no desire to get married. He came back to Bengal, and Narahari Thakur ordered him that he should take the Grihastha ashram. So because the great Vaishnava told him, then he accepted. But otherwise, he didn't really have any. There was thought didn't cross his mind, actually. But because Srinivas had delivered the king of Bankura, Monavishnupur, got the books back that he had stolen, and the king was wanted to take him as a guru. But he was, you know, to be a king's guru, that means you had to be a grihastha. And you had to sit in the king's court and he had to do a lot of things. So he was hesitating. But Narahari told him, you get married, you become the king's guru, in other words, and you preach in that way. So as the Rajguru, then he made that whole kingdom Krishna conscious, and there are many Vaishnava temples there. And he used that facility to get all the books translated, used the king's assets to infrastructure to get the books published. So Srinivas was the first publisher of our literature and our sampradaya. Those days the publishing was done by hand. They had to copy the books by hand, so they had a whole group of Brahmins just sitting copying out all the books. You know, it was a little slower process than now use a, you know, computer composing. That time was hand composing by pen, by some piece of bamboo or something and ink on the palm leaves. So they had a whole group of Brahmins copying all the books, and then each preacher was set with a whole set of books, and he would go somewhere, and he would sit down with the books, and it's called Sripat. He would sit there and start to preach from the books, and people would come and listen, and this way he would convince the people how these literatures were the proper explanation of the Vedas and the proper understanding of the Absolute Truth. And so that's where these Sripats someone would go and sit somewhere with all the books, and he would start to preach, and people would surrender and accept. So that became a Shripad. So there's a Bhagawan Golar, one place in Bengal. It's a Shripad of Ramchandra Kaviraj. That's not far from, that's about, how far would that be? Maybe 50 miles or 60, 70 kilometers from Kedrati, where Narottam Das Thakur was. He also had his set of books, and he was preaching from there. Everyone had their sat down. That was how the preaching was done then, because it was so difficult. You couldn't just distribute books. You'd have to distribute books just to a very qualified preacher, and he'd sit and he'd read the books to the people. And then he'd have some disciples, they copy some more books, they'd take one set of books and they go somewhere, sit, and then they'd preach. So now, now of course it's a whole different situation. But that was how the original book distribution and the original book publishing was going on by Srinivas. So he also was a grihastha. He had, I think, at least two children. But it said that most of the year he'd be out preaching. But during the rainy season, when in India there's no paved roads in the past, so in the heavy monsoon, all the roads become just mud. I mean, mud, not in mud like you think, a few centimeters. Mud meaning up to your thigh mud. Really thick mud. You just quicksand, it's really heavy. You can't, just to walk, a few hundred meters is effort. You kind of take a whole shower afterward. You're completely up to here, mud. Because they all taking the rice and things from their fields with these bullock carts, and they make these big wheels so because the bulls can pull if there's a big, so they chop the whole road up, and it just becomes solid mud. So you can't hardly move anywhere in the rainy season. So that was the Chaturmasya, became the time everyone, all the sadhus stopped traveling and preaching and just sat down one place and preached from there. Did there some austerities. That's why in the Chaturmasya you see me traveling outside of India. Different, but here there's paved roads. We can't do Namha preaching. Even today there's no paved roads in the villages. Only the main national highways have paved roads. So that time, during the 4 months, sometimes we read that Srinivas would spend with his family and do his writing, do some work then. Then he couldn't go out and preach. Not that every 4 months, every Chaturmas he did, but at least one Chaturmas he stayed. But other time he'd be out, he'd be in the king's palace, he'd be out preaching. He'd be organizing Gaur Purnima with Narottam Das Thakur Kethuri. So it's they're very active, and the wise seemed very supportive, very Krishna conscious. They weren't just pulling I don't have any association, I had to stay here all the time. They were very supportive. They had the other Vaishnavis that they were associating with, and they were just encouraging the husband, and the husband was giving some association. At the same time, he was doing very active preaching and active service. So that type of dedicated grihastha, brahmana, Vaishnava preachers are also needed. So we need dedicated brahmachari preachers and sannyasi preachers. We also need the type of grihastha preachers. And there's something which you don't find in the Gaudiya Math. Gaudiya Math is just brahmacharis and sannyasis and widows. Mata means that only renounced people will stay there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was an active preacher. His whole namhata was grihasthas. From the house they were preaching. And then Bhakti Siddhanta is the other extreme, kind of where everyone was in the monastery preaching, matas. And Prabhupada, he had both. He had this mandirs, temples, where there are brahmacharis and grihasthas and vanaprasthas and sannyasis, and everyone is engaged in Krishna consciousness and fulfilling their different duties externally with the varnashram, but doing their preaching. So Prabhupada took all the different examples from the previous acharyas and synthesized them into one. That was really amazing. And Prabhupada, he had said that I'm taking whatever the previous acharyas have instructed, and I'm just trying to do this to please Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to please the previous acharyas. So you can see that everything that Srila Prabhupada was doing was inspired by the previous acharyas. Even his desire to build Mayapur and have a spiritual city there, to build a big temple, was actually something predicted by Lord Nityananda to Jiva Goswami when he was taking Jiva Goswami on the Navadvip Parikrama in the last chapter. Then he predicted what would happen in the future. Or even in the beginning he predicted, I think, in the last half he gave more instructions about the Dham. He predicted, Akadbhut Mandir Haibe Prakash Gauranga Nitya Seva Haibe Bikash. There will be one fabulous Adbhut. Adbhut means like wonderful. Adbhut's a difficult word to translate. Adbhut, wonderful, fantastic, astonishing. Akadbhut Mandir, extraordinary temple. Haibe Prakash will become manifested here. Gauranga Nitya Seva, the eternal principle of Lord Chaitanya's, or eternal devotional service to Lord Chaitanya, Haibe Bikash will be spread. Bikash means widely spread. Of course, Prabhupada said that Mayapur will be the center for the whole world, preaching. Then Nityananda also predicted that around the temple there'll be 200 years or more will be all flooded and people that will shift from here. The whole Navadvip will become shifted, this very small village. But then again, this temple will come, then a city will grow around the temple, and all the city will be all devotees of Lord Chaitanya. It'll be a city of all devotees. So we know since the very beginning in 1968, Prabhupada was saying that we should have a center in Mayapur Vrindavan, and in Mayapur we should build a spiritual city. We should make the biggest temple there in the world. So all these were actually the desire of Lord Nityananda's prediction, the desire of the previous acharyas. Whatever Prabhupada was doing, he just wanted to fulfill all of their desires systematically, one by one. Was Bhaktivinoda Thakur had predicted that Russians will come to Mayapur. He said, British, French, Americans, Germans, Russians. I don't know if he said Germans or Prussians or something, but he said Russians also. Especially those countries and others. He said they'll be coming and they'll be chanting Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan in Navadvip Mayapur. And then they'll be coming and embracing with the devotees from Mayapur, from India. They say, oh, our brothers, our Arjun brothers, and they'll be saying our Vaishnava brothers, and they'll be embracing each other, no question of caste, nationality, other distinction. They'll all be chanting together, and in their countries they'll be doing Harinam with coal and kartal and flags. So all these predictions, by Prabhupada's mercy, they all came true. And he was that planted the seeds of preaching and Soviet Union, which is now blooming. So you can see that how Prabhupada's, he used to say, my secret of success, I'm simply trying to satisfy the desires of my spiritual master. And one time at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disappearance festival, in Mayapur, he explained that the secret of success is to please the previous acharyas, one's guru, as well as the previous acharyas. So this way, we purify our intelligence by taking the instructions from Sadhu, Shastra and Guru, not only our Guru, but the previous acharyas. Purify our intelligence and then we dedicate our mind, surrender our mind to lotus feet of Krishna and use the intelligence to engage ourselves in Krishna's service. This is the transcendental use of intelligence. And here in Paranjana's story, we're just going to see the general scenario. The body is guided by the intelligence and the soul is just following after the intelligence. Just like a henpecked husband follows after the wife. So, if we're going to follow the intelligence, we should have a Krishna conscious intelligence. Then the intelligence will be guiding us properly. So, the proper guidance of the intelligence is to serve the previous acharyas, to satisfy their desire, to take their wisdom, their vision, and then use that as our guiding principle. So that was what Srila Prabhupada was doing, and that's what we are dedicated to also do, is to please all these previous acharyas who have dedicated themselves in serving Lord Chaitanya's movement and are all merciful. They've given us their mercy, are giving us their mercy today. And this mercy will be spread to all of the people by following their formulas. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any question? Yes?
Today we see that actually so many scriptures of Lord Chaitanya's time, we just even in the Jews and making contact with the Jews, we could only have these predictions.
Could you repeat again? I didn't catch it. That was explained by Nityananda Prabhu to Jiva Goswami that by Krishna's yoga maya, although the core predictions were there, but people couldn't understand the predictions. Because Krishna didn't want them to understand the predictions before he came, because if they did, then his whole incarnation would be obstructed. He left it. He wanted it to be mysterious, so that he could come as a devotee. If it was very clear, then everyone would be looking for where is that devotee avatar, and he'd be. People would all be calling him as Krishna, and then he couldn't be a proper devotee. No, some great scholars could pick it out. Some great devotee, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when he saw the symptoms of Lord Chaitanya, and he saw the quotes in the Bhagavatam, then in the other Vedas, he could put it together finally. A few people like that it was revealed to, but in general it was kept hidden. Just like if you say that, okay, tomorrow the King of Sweden is going to make a secret visit at this particular place, you know, then everyone, you know, be looking out for it. Okay, he's going to come and wearing a, you know, black hat and a overcoat. And it was a secret that everybody would be standing there, you know, trying to pick him out. So although the symptoms were there, but like Krishna kept his yoga maya so that people didn't register. After Lord Chaitanya left, then Lord Nityananda said, now it doesn't matter, now everyone can know. So then he was explaining all the truths about Lord Chaitanya. And all the Vaishnava scholars, they then showed the followers of Lord Chaitanya who knew, they also didn't tell anybody until after he left, because they also didn't want to disturb his pastime. Afterwards they told, everything is really well documented and cross-referenced. As far as why the Western translators don't know, there's a very big, there's no doubt that the Western translators in any case were not objective in their translation. They were translating for the purpose of trying to find loopholes to defeat Vedic culture and establish Christianity in India. That's their proclaimed purpose. Now, is the letters from Max Müller and other German translators have become published, and they said that this Hindu pandits are very difficult. You know, we cannot convince the Brahma. They have explicit faith in their Vedas. So what I'm going to do is learn Sanskrit. I'm going to translate the Vedas. I'll translate in such a way that the other people who don't know the Vedas, only the Brahmins know the Vedas. The other people, they'll read our translation. We'll translate in such a way we'll undermine their faith, and then we'll be able to give Christianity. He wrote a letter like that. It's a published letter. It's like he had, this was his whole thing. So all these translators, these famous translators, were cheaters. They went there just for the purpose of trying to. That's why they translated Vigraha or Murti as idol. Knowing that a Christian mentality, if you hear idol, is like a false god or something, or some. It's a very bad context. But the Vigraha. Idol is not a proper translation of the word vigraha. It's a deity. It's a form. But you know, they twisted things like that. So now these letters, we have the copies of the letters in Mayapur, the photocopies. We put in our exhibit. But just for reference, or some quotes. Of course, that was their purpose when they started. Some of them developed a healthy respect for Vedic culture. Because, but that was their initial purpose. Whether later they became converted or not, I don't know. But that's why it wasn't known by everyone, because of yoga maya. But now, you tell everyone, why should they stay in the dark? Any other question? Of course. There are some people that claim they have original manuscripts. The tall palm leaf writings, if they're kept very dry, apparently they last for quite a long time. Those manuscripts from 500 years ago or even 1,000 years ago. Imagine you move them, you know, it's like they can crumble very easy. So now it's been customary that those type of writings were kept in special like root cellar type arrangements in ancient temples. That's where Lord Chaitanya found the Bhama Samhita and the Krishna Karnamrita in Adi Keshava temple in South India, made a hand copy right away. They don't let this reference, they don't let anyone take them out. I think a lot of those manuscripts have been kept in the archives of the Asian society in India. I know they have a lot of manuscripts. Some are kept in the National Library. Some are kept still in the temple. Different temples, they have these ancient manuscripts. Apart from the ancient original manuscript, the fact that they would be kept active because people would always be copying, and so that people would make copies of the copies of the copies. And they would always, because of the parampara system, you don't get different copies. Everyone has like the same version of Bhagavad Gita. Now that somebody said, I found 25 new verses trying to... Apart from that, everybody else has the same version. The whole Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses, I think there's two slokas that there's a difference. And Prabhupada puts that in a little footnote. So there's a tremendous... There's no contradiction in that sense. They've kept... Even though whether the original manuscript is... original by Burnesh, I don't know if you'll find, but very old manuscripts, they're available. But even the contemporary ones, there's no contradiction. People have continued the... Each Sampradaya has been keeping the Bhagavatam copies in print, and this has kept it alive. And they don't have any contradiction about what the verses are. But I think there was a special project originally financed by the BBT, and then Smithsonian Institute had taken over, that Garuda Das and others they were doing, where they've microfiched all the manuscripts in Vrindavan and a few places, and those are in the Smithsonian Institute in America. But really the BBT should have a copy of all them. They originally financed, but then they got some more financing. But I don't think the BBT is even aware of it so much. Should be good to have all those copies. I gave the original idea that it should be done because these, you know, things are really going out of print fast. And then the Rameshwar Prabhu started the whole thing, and then they got financing from the Smithsonian Institute, continued. And then they ended up with all of the features. I don't know, maybe in L.A. they have a copy too. I was wanting to get a copy for the central, like Prabhupada archives there. Each temple has different collections of manuscripts in the old temples. But they just touched the surface. They were just looking for Gaudiya literature in Vrindavan. They didn't try all the other Vedas. You'd have to go to South India and do that. Any other question? Well, there's very little parallel between the Yadu dynasty and Lord Chaitanya's associates. Yadu dynasty was filled with the different devas who took birth in the Yadu dynasty from the upper planetary systems, and who were kshatriyas, and they were very belligerent, powerful warriors and generals. And Krishna, you know, didn't want to have all these powerful soldiers on the earth to create the kind of imbalance. Just wanted it all returned back to wherever they came from. So he arranged a pastime where they all left at the same time. Lord Chaitanya's senior associates did leave, but they died. They left out of separation of Lord Chaitanya. Haridas Thakur left before, but the others, most of them left within a very short time. They weren't able to. The immediate associates of Lord Chaitanya were not able to do much preaching. Once Lord Chaitanya left, they were too shook up in his separation. They did some preaching, but. They're mainly overwhelmed and just feeling separation of Lord Chaitanya. The preaching really exploded afterwards by the next generation, like Birchandra, the son of Nityananda, Achyutananda, son of Advaita, Srinivas, and the six Goswamis, first went to Vrindavan, but they wrote the books. Srinivas, Narottam, and Shyamananda Pandit, and then their disciples, they were doing most of the preaching afterwards. The immediate associates who were their whole time with Lord Chaitanya when he left, they were very much absorbed in separation. So Nityananda, of course, he continued preaching for a while, but then he also left with Advaita. He left after he met Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami had studied in Banaras, was going to Vrindavan, but first he came to Navadvip, met Nityananda. Then he went to Vrindavan and met Rupa and Sanatana. And then Jiva Goswami became the main defender of the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. He remained present on the planet longer than the others. He was younger also. He was like the Shiksha Guru for the society, that last society, the whole movement. I don't know of any books written by Nityananda Prabhu. But I just don't know. That doesn't mean I have to research it. I haven't heard. As far as the Yadus, wherever they came from, that's where they went back, as far as we know. Different Yadus came from the spiritual world, they went back to the spiritual world. Other Yadus that came from other places, as far as we know, they went back there. Since there are a few million Yadus, I don't know, maybe somebody's life was already finished on the other planet and they went back to the spiritual world. But some principal Jadus who were Devas, as far as we know, they went back to being Devas again, but they were purified. They were purified and fixed in devotional service. Any other question? Pardon? How old was he? At Akachakra village, where he took birth, they claim that there he entered into the deity room and entered into the Bunki Rai deity of Krishna. And then they opened the door and he was no longer there. That's what they claim that. That's the only thing I've ever heard. But I haven't seen it written anywhere, actually. Acharyas don't like to write a lot about the disappearance past time. That's what they say there. There are no remnants, no samadhi or anything to Lord Chaitanya or Nityananda. I don't know if there's a samadhi to Advaita, I've never heard. It became a substantial part 450 years ago. During Lord Chaitanya's direct pastimes, there was, they were reading the Bhagavatam and they were chanting Hare Krishna and having Bhagavatam classes. This was the basic. And then afterwards, many people, there wasn't Bhagavatam purports, they would just read the Bhagavatam. So then the Bhagavatam purports was only by Sridhar Swami. So people didn't understand a lot of the things in the Bhagavatam so clearly. So then all the literatures by the six Goswamis came out, and Chaitanya Charitamrita came out. This gave a very clear perspective to the Bhagavatam and gave inner secrets about Krishna's pastimes and position. It was so that once those literatures came back from Vrindavan, and they were the basis for all the preaching. Books were the basis before, but then it was just the Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada's Bhagavatam purports include a lot of commentary, a lot of explanation, which embodies the realizations of the six Goswamis. Lord Narottam Das Thakur, he wrote a song, a little poetry, which is published in the Bhakti Ratnakar. I can send it, verses, it's a small few verses. The gist of it is Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has appeared in this world with his different energies, his shaktis. And the different energies of Lord Chaitanya are basically engaged in two kinds of transcendental activity. Some of them are engaged in writing transcendental literature, and others are engaged in distributing those transcendental literatures. So both are the confidential servitors or energies of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he said the six Goswamis were engaged in writing the literature, and Srinivas Acharya and others were engaged in distributing it. So little. You like that? Is it? You have a copy of Bhaktivedanta here? I could find it. Otherwise, I have in Atlanta. I'm coming right from India at the present time. After a brief journey in Europe, and go to America, we're having some TBC meetings on ISKCON constitution things. So there, as far as book distribution, Narottam Das Thakur gave this vision that it's a very confidential, intimate service for Lord Chaitanya, the book distribution as well as the book writing, publishing. So it's not even something new just from Bhakti Siddhanta, so to speak, but it comes right from Narottam Das Thakur. It's the very roots of our sampradaya. Krishna himself, as Vyasadeva, wrote down all the literatures. And Ganesha was helping. The instruction to the devotees to go out and send him out to the train stations to distribute the books. And every day they'd come back, he'd get the report how many books were distributed. Even if they get one book, he was really happy to go out and keep distributing. He was the first to really, as such, organize a distribution of literature before the, because it was all handwritten. You know, the publishing only came in the past century, I think. Maybe in China it was a little longer, but you can't like just distribute handbooks. What would happen was that somebody would hear the book, they'd want a copy, then they would pay to have some Brahmin write it, then he'd get his copy. So it's like, this book distribution was, you really had to convince the person to want the book, because then he'd have to have it copied. It was a distributing the book was a much more involved process. But the person who got the book was very convinced. Then after that, he just surrendered to the book, and then he would in turn have other distributors. I guess it's hard for someone to think of book distribution, you know, trying to relate with it. Narottam Das Thakur described it as book distribution. Although the process is much more different, much different. Jai Book Distribution Ki! Jai Hari Ram Sankirtan Mahajagya Ki! Jai Panchatattva Ki! Nitai Srila Prabhupada Ki! Go Premanandi! Jai Go Premanandi!